Hey, Barstool listeners, you can find every episode of this show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Hey, everybody, welcome on back. It's the Rubbin' His Racin' Podcast.
Hey guys, it's Big Cat and Fight Week is here. Rough and Rowdy 24 invades Clarksburg, West Virginia this Friday night, April 19th at 8 p.m. Eastern. For the first time since Rough and Rowdy 1, every single fight will be a brand new brawler, and we found the wildest hillbillies the holler has to offer. Order now to enjoy 20 amateur matchups with no headgear, plus our live ring girl contest after the final bell. These country roads are being paved with blood and grit and balls. Join me and Dave on the call for Rough and Rowdy 24 tonight at 8 p.m. Eastern. Witness all the chaos with pay-per-view replay available all weekend long on buyrnr.com. That's buyrnr.com.
All right, we have Tyler Reddick today. We have Tyler Reddick, who is the latest winner on the NASCAR Cup Series. He's going to be coming up in a couple of seconds. Tyler, extremely friendly with us.
He's the man. He's always been very good to us.
Who's your favorite? Who's your favorite as far as talking with people?
People ask me this all the time, Large. I don't know. It's so hard because I feel like I'm friends with all of them at this point. But Tyler Reddick's definitely up there. I would say if I had a stable, like four cars, he would probably be one of my four drivers.
Okay. I'll tell you, I thought Logano was great last week. Like Joey, for the first time speaking with us, he was wonderful.
He was great to converse with, I'll say that. For someone who I love booing, he was great to have a discussion with.
Right. Joey Logano, by the way. The potential title of this one might be Tyler Reddick is NASCAR's best road course driver. We'll talk about that in a second. Great weekend. Great weekend for race fans. Starting with the trucks and the Xfinity. Zane Smith repeats at Circuit of the Americas. I had him, so I felt fantastic about it. Quiggs was first to market at getting it up on social, which made me feel so goddamn good.
Quiggs always makes us look like winners, even when our bets don't cash.
It's not easy to do.
It's not easy.
Somebody's got a plus 750. We're going to get it up.
Yeah. Love I think
we're not going to post the losers.
Right. But I think when
that's the Mr. Ice method.
Yeah.
You post the winners.
When we were talking about it before the race started, we thought, you know, having like, Bush and I think Chastain were the two favorites in that. It's sort of like they forgot about Zane Smith, who was the, you know, the defending champion. So right now, Jane Smith, his sister, is a rocket ship. But Zane Smith, so he won Daytona. And now he just won COTA, and that's the same first two victories as he had last season where he wound up winning the whole goddamn thing.
Zane Smith is like the future of the sport. Hopefully we get a chance to speak with him at some point this season. But yeah, the future is bright for him, and the present is bright too. Congrats on a great win this weekend at COTA.
Yeah, Xfinity turned out to be a two-man race. A.J. Allmendinger and William Byron led the field, but Byron was like 7 seconds behind him. Like AJ, the field was 7 seconds behind him. It was AJ and Byron the whole way. I had Ty Gibbs, and he was in P3. He had no shot unless the two were to spin out, and he was to thread the needle, sort of like Chastain had done last year at COTA. So that was basically a dominant race by AJ Allmendinger, with William Byron just still being as fast as fuck. But our guy, Sheldon Creed, the guy who I like now, he won a stage. Yeah, he got spun by AJ.
Yeah.
So he recovered. He finished ninth. That's his third top 10 finish this season. So we're trying to pay a little bit of attention to Xfinity, as you guys know. And Sheldon Creed is one of the guys that we have on our radar just because he looks like an absolute fucking animal. Guy looks like he can get into a good bar fight, you know, take off the glasses and go to it. But he's having himself a hell of a season. Great day Sunday. It seemed like he was hot down there. We're speaking to Tyler in a little bit, and I think he's going to – I assume he's going to complain about the heat because everyone was, or at least the heat inside the cars. But one person who had a tough day again was Kyle Larson. I don't know if Kyle Larson is on the hot seat at this point.
No. I mean, I think the pressure's on, but a hot seat means he's going to get like fired. I don't think his job's in jeopardy. Yeah. I think his season is in jeopardy. He's got to start winning and having better finishes, especially given the penalty that him and his teammates were hit with. So I think pressure's on for Kyle Larson to turn it around ASAP.
Hot seat is I don't think anyone who won a cup championship in 21 is on a hot seat for quite some time. So you're right. I think maybe, though, somebody's got to light a fire underneath him, because right now I'd have him on the over-unders. I'd have him as definitely an under for this season.
Well, right? He's probably third on his team right now, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
You got William Byron with two wins. You got Alex Bowman with, what did you say, how many top fives?
I think he has top fives in 5 of 6 races.
Something like that. Yeah. And then I would have Larson, who struggled, and then the fourth would be the revolving door of whoever's driving the 9, just by default. So
wouldn't you think that with Chase out, that would have been the exact opposite? You would have thought Kyle Larson would be number one with the bullet, you know, within that team, and he's not.
Was that a Fallout Boy lyric?
Yeah.
That was fire.
Yeah, it's a loaded gun. Copy.
Yeah, but no, honestly, but if everyone was healthy, you think Larson, Chase, 1-2, and then Alex and William kind of 2-3 or 3-4. Unfortunately, that's kind of how I would see it preseason, but obviously that's not what we've seen this season.
Yeah, 23-11 is another team that we've kept an eye on for good reason because they just won. But the opposite is Bubba. Bubba's feeling bad for himself.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it seems like he's having a tough time, and he went in and said that maybe he should be replaced. What is that about? Does he believe that he should no longer have...
That was bizarre.
That was,
I mean, he's talking
crazy
about himself, but, like, if they were to drop him today, he'd be pissed. Like, he doesn't actually want to be replaced.
I didn't know what to make of that post-race interview. It was definitely something...
It's just frustration.
Yeah. Probably.
Broke toe link in the rear and then oil on. Just trying my hardest not to go down that slippery slope of self-doubt right here. 2 weeks in a row making rookie mistakes. 6 years in the cup. Need to be replaced.
But what about a guy like Michael Jordan all of a sudden seeing that one of his marquee drivers is saying something like that? I know if you're in the NBA playing on the Bulls with Michael Jordan, you said, you know, something like that in a post-game interview, he would have tore you a new asshole.
Yeah.
Don't you think that's the case?
Yeah, but also, like, I mean, I don't know if he should have been like, yeah, I need to be dropped from the team. But you also don't want your guy to just go out there week after week and be like, oh, we're going to get him next week. Like,
right.
I guess you want him to be somewhat hard on themselves and be like, yeah, I got to pick it up because I care.
Right. Accountability is great, but I thought it sounded a little bit
He went a little
bitchy.
Too far off the deep end, yeah.
You think MJ still does, like, in The Last Dance when he walks around with the baseball bat? there, that would be great.
Yeah. He's throwing quarters in the locker room.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. We're going to speak to one of his drivers in a little bit so we can see just how hands-on he is. And maybe he's not. Maybe MJ doesn't make that call. I hope he does.
Yeah, I would love that if he were more involved. I think the more involved MJ is, the better for NASCAR.
I wrote up a whole thing. Like, you read it. I wanted LaJoy then. I was like, oh, LaJoy should jump in his spot. You were like, that's impossible. And I know it's impossible, but
I don't know that it is impossible. I just think it's highly unlikely. I think for LaJoy to make the switch to a different manufacturer mid-season would be crazy, especially when, and I know you said Spire Motorsports, not the most, you know, lucrative team to race for. Mm-hmm. However, he's shown success there this season. Why would he go and give up on that midway through the season if there was even a 1% chance that this was
hypothetical? Just being a faster car.
Would LaJoy do it?
Yeah.
Oh, LaJoy would do it in a heartbeat.
Well, listen, I'm saying
LaJoy's also been a long time, like, the only thing that matters in NASCAR is equipment. And
yeah,
he said, he's like, if you put me in
he's fighting
good equipment, I'm winning.
He's fighting
so
for
races.
A good opportunity, but at the
so
same
he would
time.
Take good equipment in its
second. Like, how much of it is, if he wanted to, I don't know how, like, the contracts and the
either.
Team obligations.
I don't know how that works in any
could
sport.
He just
it's
up
like
and
they
leave?
Don't mean anything. But
I feel like it would be on Spire to release him, and that is where I'm of the opinion this isn't happening, because I don't think the team allows him to do that when they've already had probably an overachieving season relative to what the expectations
were. But they said he was a possibility when Chase broke his leg.
Yeah, in a Chevy.
Which I get, but that's I think the upgrade in money on what you're driving, the car that you're driving, I think trumps the manufacturer angle. Listen, he's 15, and this is why it's wild. Corey LaJoy is 15th or 16th in points right now. Corey LaJoy is having a bang-up season.
Yeah.
So this would be the only time that you know, if you're going to strike while the iron's hot, and they're not going to do it. Bubba Wallace is not going to be, you know, replaced on it. But I just think if he's going to bring it up, then people are going to talk about it. And I'm talking about Corey LaJoy.
I think it would be another Toyota driver. I don't know who. John Hunter, maybe?
Like, if they had a trade deadline? Like, basically?
Yeah.
Yeah. That would be kind of cool.
That could be cool. Yeah.
That's a hot seat.
Yeah.
That's a hot seat. Kurt Busch got choked up after seeing Tyler Reddick come across in 45. He literally started to cry and whatnot.
It was almost contagious, because I feel like Part of me got emotional because I was like feeling for Kurt. I was like, damn, he wants to be racing. I wish he could be, you know, like, I don't know. So he's great addition to the booth, but the whole thing was kind of like contagiously emotional, I'll call it.
There's no crying in NASCAR. Right? Is that a pussy move? Or I'm not saying I like Kurt Busch.
I'm team tears all day.
Okay.
There's a lot of you're a history guy, Lars. There's a lot of historic moments in NASCAR that invoke tears.
Right.
I didn't think that was like historic though. No. I thought the cry was a little overboard. He's like crying because he sees like the Monster Energy logo back in Victory. Like, I don't know if it's worth crying.
Fuck you guys. I'm team emotion.
He's a huge mentor for that team.
I'm
Bubba
team
Wallace
emotion.
Has said it. So, I mean, he's very, very emotionally invested.
He is as involved as he could be right now, given the hand he was dealt. For him to see his car win, that, like he said, he wished he could be driving. He unfortunately has to do the next best thing, which is call the race. So obviously he was overcome with emotions. I don't think it's a pussy move.
No.
Look at,
I've said hot seat. I've said we're 5 minutes in here. I've said Kyle Larson is on the hot
this
seat. Bubba
rips.
Wallace is getting fucking replaced, and Kurt Busch is a pussy.
None of
those things are true. Like Kurt Busch was hanging out at Diplo. I told you he was the coolest guy in the room.
Jeff Gordon
was not. Like Jeff Gordon tried to hang out, listen to Diplo. Kurt Busch is awesome. And he's like the chief fun officer or something like that for 2311. So nothing but respect. And they're the winningest brothers in the history of NASCAR as of a couple of weeks ago. Were you able to listen to any of the broadcast?
No. So we were in the sports book in Colorado at Blackhawk Ameristar Casino. They're a great sports book. Luckily, I was able to get NASCAR on the big screen. So shout out to the great folks at the Barstool Sportsbook that made that happen. But the sound was on the college basketball games, understandably so. We were there for a March Madness event. So I couldn't really hear Chase on the broadcast or any of the ins and outs. I heard from a buddy texting me that Tyler Reddick late in the race might be like low on fuel or he might have to pit. So I was getting mixed reports. It was very nerve-wracking watching the race on mute. But what was that like? What did you guys think of Chase?
I thought it was good. I mean, it was a little bit weird of a setup where they only went to him at some points, but he was also like kind of there the whole time. And I don't know if he was just sitting there waiting to be called on, but it would be like 30 minutes in between. But he did have like really good insight, and I mean, everyone in the booth kind of has a racing background, but like his like insight on like the late like restarts and where he would go, like which line he would choose and why he would choose that, and like the advantage of even if you're in second, going on the inside and taking third because you have that, like it was good, but it was a little bit weird too. I don't know. It's always tough to do like a remote guy on the broadcast.
I thought it was excellent. I thought they already had four guys in the booth,
yeah,
and they should have punted that guy Gunther.
Yeah.
Like, that guy Gunther was a five-minute dude.
Yes.
The only thing I had a problem with Chase is I didn't like the fact that he was in front of, like, a China cabinet in Vail, Colorado.
Yeah.
It reminded me of, like, the Zoom fatigue everybody has from COVID.
Yeah.
Like, maybe put him in something that looked a little bit more like, I'm not like, hey, get your broken ass to, Dakota to do it live. I don't mean that, but maybe put him in a local studio or something because he was legitimately in a dining room and that was off-putting.
I agree.
Gunter.
I think if they would have swapped their roles to where it's like Chase is more permanently on the broadcast and Gunther's the guy they kind of go to, I guess, get like Formula One comparisons. I don't know.
Am I dumb for thinking that Chase was going to be like in the booth physically, literally?
I did too. I did too.
Yeah, I was on the impression because I watched Sat. By the way, Spider had mentioned I sometimes write out a little bit of an outline for this. I wrote a Bible. All I did this weekend was watch goddamn NASCAR.
Yeah.
I'm starting to get hooked.
I love it.
On Saturday, Brad Kay and Joey Logano were in the booth. They were awesome.
Yeah.
They were awesome in the booth.
They're
Brad Kay's very
the
good.
The Cup guys always seem to deliver in the booth. They do that a lot of the Xfinity call. Like they'll call the Xfinity race a lot of times, and they always seem to be fan favorites.
Yeah. I mean, Brad should be in a booth at some point. And I thought, again, I'm done blowing Logano after this, but I thought he was fucking awesome. And the way they were going, particularly after what had happened last week, it was kind of cool to see him together. Let's talk about Suarez. I think Suarez might be the biggest story coming out of this outside of who the winner was. He's on tilt. So he goes into pit row after the thing. He bumps Chastain out of the way, and then he bumps the back of Bowman, and he does it within 20 feet of an official. Like, there's an official standing right there. And if that car goes anywhere, if he spins out Bowman in pit row, that official, I got to think he's dead.
Yeah.
So I'm not a big fan necessarily of fines or deducting points or anything like that, but I really think this guy should be thrown in a fucking volcano for it this week, because they did it to Ty Gibbs last year, you know? And so I don't think anyone's going to stand up and be a fan, although I think Spider might be a little bit.
I'm a big Daniel's amigos. Mm-hmm. I remain a Daniel amigo.
You do.
Listen, I don't agree with that move. I'm with you guys. I think it's reckless. Someone could have gotten injured. But at the same time, Suarez, I had Trackhouse plus 500. So hear me out. Hear me out. Aside from that, Daniel's fucking day got ruined.
Yes.
Like, he had every right to be upset. Now, I don't agree with the way that he you know, took out his frustration, but his own teammate and his own, like, I don't know. I think that he had every right to be upset, and I think I agree and love the fact that he called Chastain out after the race and got in his face. Like, fuck that. Chastain's always pushing everyone around. And if you can't even keep your own teammate in your good graces, the problem probably lies with you. So, I don't know. I'm Team Daniel over Ross for the current moment. Mm-hmm. I heard the clip. Ross says to Daniel, "Daniel, don't be all high and mighty." I didn't care for that. You guys are teammates. I love the fighting after races. However, not amongst teammates, especially when there's only two of you on the same team. So
I like how we went to Bowman, and Bowman's like, no, it's your guy. go to the other.
Yeah. Well, a week before, wasn't Bowman and Ross having a disagreement because they didn't stay in line and help each other?
I think so, yeah.
So, I don't know.
A couple of weeks ago, Suarez was kind of, you know, in the doghouse for making some questionable moves, saying that he had someone behind him. So I don't think anyone's necessarily innocent here, but Daniel Suarez right now with Trackhouse, which is kind of a sexy team. We like the way that they think.
Absolutely.
We like the buzz that's around him. I think with his sponsors and being like an international ambassador for NASCAR, which is how they have him set up, you know, I think he's got to be better than bumping somebody like that. So I do want him to get fined. I can't wait for him to be fucking fined for it, because it was a dumb move.
Yeah, because you said he got his day ruined, but so did like 30 other people.
Yeah,
like that's the type of race it is. It's like everybody's getting their day ruined.
Don't bump anybody
on that first turn,
but then get out and start maybe throwing some haymakers, because the bump doesn't do anything for him.
Because that's the other thing.
My problem.
A lot of times they're out of their safety harness at that point, and like it doesn't seem like much, but he's probably hitting them on the bumper at like 40 miles per hour. And that's like without having the NASCAR safety anymore. He's just in a civilian car, basically.
Listen, I'm not defending him doing that. I'm saying he has every right to be upset. He was there late in the race with a chance to win. Sure, several other cars got ruined. How many cars can say that? Can say they had a real chance at winning? Ross and Daniel, both late at the end, I don't know what overtime it was, looked like they could have potentially stolen a win.
He was top five. Yeah, when he got spun, he was top five in that OT. So, yeah, it was. I tell you, the only reason that I liked it is that this guy, Matt Baltic, hit me and said, "You got to plow Michael McDowell." And I looked at the Barstool Sportsbook. I didn't see anything that was kind of sexy enough for me. So I wound up taking McDowell versus Suarez in a head-to-head. Mm-hmm. And it was the worst bet of my life until the OT when Suarez got spun out. And so I wound up winning money on that. So I'm happy all the way around.
I heard a lot of people saying good things about McDowell on road courses prior to this week. And I'm glad you were able to profit off it.
I made a lot of money this week. That's why I'm so excited about my outline. Ricky Stenhouse Jr., one of our favorite people in the world. So on top of getting a win at Daytona 500, he gets his first career top 10 on a road course at COTA. So congratulations to him. What else had happened? We had all those hired guns I was telling you about. Jimmy Johnson's not a hired gun, but we had a bunch of guys who aren't traditional Cup Series drivers or are retired who are back or in this race for the first time. None of them fared very well. Jimmy Johnson, I believe you had taken him on a head-to-head.
I took him top 10.
Oh, top 10?
Done right away.
Yeah,
he didn't get one lap.
Yeah, he barely started. And he got
that
it,
was
not
tough.
Finish. Yeah,
and we like, spoke with Jimmy, and he was how excited to run this race.
He was very excited to run.
And that's the like besides the bet, I wanted to see him what he could do. Like I feel like he could have done something on that track.
It was disappointing for sure to see Jimmy go down like that. But my question is like for you guys. Aside from Jimmy and maybe Connor Daly, who have, we've obviously spoken with, who have expressed their interest in wanting to obviously remain racing on the Cup Series, like, what do you think about these other guys? Kimi and Jensen Button, after the race, just commented on how much contact they took and how they were surprised that the cars were even able to drive after that and how this race singularly had more contact than they've seen in their entire career prior to that. Like, do you think this is a bad thing for these guys? Like a bad, I don't know. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah. Do you think it's bad for NASCAR?
No,
or do you think
no.
It's bad
for these guys that come in and run it and give it a shot and then they have like a bad experience. Do you think they're like have a sour taste in their mouth about participating in future similar events?
I mean,
like
it's, I don't know. It's different than F1. F1, you're going to have the, there's not going to be much passing. There's not going to be much content or contact. They're going to be lining up single file on restarts. I don't know. If they don't like it, then like that's not their style.
That's kind of
what I mean.
It was
a little
love.
Overboard, like the amount of contact and like the way they're getting into that first turn where it's just you got four wide and everybody's touching each other to get around there. But I don't know. It's like if Kimi Raikkonen doesn't like NASCAR, that's – it's not
going to
collapse NASCAR.
Him and Gunther can both, blow. But the thing is, too, is like I say with boxing, you don't play boxing. So if you have a guy like Conor McGregor comes over from the UFC and gets, you know, wiped by Floyd Mayweather, you know, that's the way that it goes. Yeah. You knew the risks coming in. And I don't think it's going to stop these guys from doing it because you have a Travis Pastrana story in the Daytona 500, which everyone really gripped onto. I think it might stop them from doing it at COTA. Like, because, like you're saying, I saw a 5 or 6 deep, right? They were 5 or 6 wide at some point turn one. So, I don't know. And Jensen Button had said afterwards he almost had to stop twice from heat exhaustion because he's used to, you know, driving without a top.
Yeah.
He's tops off for the lads.
You think the F1 guys will be deterred even though this is like a F1 track?
I don't know. I mean, that seems to be what they were complaining about.
I kind of feel
I think the F1 guys should love it.
Yeah.
Because it's like, I'm sure there's been many times that they've been racing, and it's like, I would love to just kind of get to this guy and not, like, wreck him, but, like, be able to make the contact, be able to, like,
trade some paint,
just kind of, like, couple rules out the window type racing. I feel like they would love it.
So maybe a different road course then. Honestly, like, that first turn, the amount of dirt that was kicked up on 9, everyone going right and kicking the dirt left, like, there's certain things, like maybe the F1 guys should jump on the fact to get into the Chicago race, do you know, which is not, I don't know if that's being qualified as a road course, but we're certainly making lefts and rights. Maybe they tear that shit up and still be able to make some contact.
Yeah.
They didn't have it. Kimi finished 29th.
Mm-hmm.
He was fourth at some point. Jordan Taylor, you know, who they brought in for Chase Elliott, Josh Berry, they got him out, but in Jordan Taylor qualified fourth.
Yeah.
But he finished 24th. Connor Daly with the money team, Floyd Mayweather's team, he had transmission issues. He finished 36th. And Jensen Button was the cream of the crop. He's a 2009 F1 champion, and he finished 18th. So, I mean, not stellar showings for anyone particularly. So I think if you get to see these matchups on a weekly basis from betting-wise, you just bet against these guys.
Yeah.
You know, in any sort of matchup, if you can get something. The race itself was awesome. Let me ask you guys. I thought it was the best race of the season. I wasn't expecting the best race of the season so far to be on a road course. Am I out of my mind thinking it's the best race of the season? Am I high because I had the winner? It was clean.
I don't know if it was the best race of the season. It was definitely the most like dramatic and exciting, I will say. But I think the best pure race of the season might have been Fontana. That was just awesome
Fontana
to watch.
Was great.
And I say it's clean, even though you're just like clean. It was an hour of fucking 3 overtimes. I just meant the racing up front.
It was clean, large, because Reddick had a fucking rocket ship.
That's
and he,
true.
Once the restarts were kind of done with, he just had a second lead.
I will tell you that no stage breaks after the Sages, I thought was awesome.
I loved it, yeah.
They just kept going. I don't know what the plans are, but, man, I hope they keep doing that. That probably took a half hour off of the runtime.
I would love to see them continue to tinker with the rules a little bit to make them the races more easy to watch. Like, for the end there, I don't know what they can do to kind of tighten that up, but the three overtimes, that dragged-out finish, I think there can be maybe a little bit of a rule change somewhere that alleviates that.
I think the only thing they could do for those, like, late restarts is start them single file, which has its own, like, issues of just losing a lot of fun.
What happens when the trouble that causes the caution is a mile behind the leader?
Well, that's where I suggest maybe changing the rules.
Yeah, you finish that lap, and then you drop the caution and basically make it... Because, you know, so if Tyler Reddick is a mile and a half into the course, and a half a mile into it, there's some sort of caution, let him finish, and then before he gets around to anywhere where the debris or anything is, then you throw the caution, because otherwise you're just left with, you know, this constant
overtime. I think the mindset of it from throwing the flag is they, even though it's really not, like, in overtime they're supposed to go two laps. Like, the throwing the caution after the white flag shouldn't be like a cop out.
Okay.
So the track is long. It's 3 point something. Yeah. I think the theory is if whoever got hit and or spun out can get out of there before the lap cars will return and not leave a bunch of debris, then they shouldn't throw the caution, and they'll give them a little bit of time to see if that's the way it's looking. But I think they started to get more lax with it after, like, I think that last lap where Tyler actually won, like, there were some pretty decent wrecks, and they just didn't throw it.
Right.
Because I think they were like, we're going to do this all
day. Chris Bell went out.
Yeah.
All right, so there's no better person to talk to about what had happened this Sunday than Tyler Reddick, so let's go three wide with Tyler Reddick. Hey, everybody, so as promised, we got Tyler Reddick. Tyler Reddick is just won on another road course, the Echo Park Automotive Grand Prix in the Circuit of the Americas in Coda.
Yeah.
He's got the big, shiny statue behind him. With that absolute bear of a road course on the actual statue. First of all, Tyler, for people who don't listen to the show too often, Tyler's one of our favorite people in the world, not only our favorite person at NASCAR. We couldn't be happier for you. I won a bunch of money on you this weekend. I don't know if that helps or doesn't, but thank you very much on behalf of me and my family. How you feeling? What's going on, my man?
I'm starting to feel a little better. Last couple weeks were a bit crazy for myself. Came down with the stomach virus, fell ill Thursday before Atlanta, and I was up all night, sick, couldn't sleep. Denny flew in, John Hunter Nemechek, who runs the Xfinity Series. He's a 2311's reserve driver. He came down and was ready to get in the car. My condition didn't get better. Thankfully I did. I went to the Infidel Care Center, took in like 2.5 bags of IV fluid and started to barely feel better. And was thankfully able to walk out to the car without getting sick. That was a start. And then, I thought I was going to get sick in the car a few times, but thankfully didn't. Got through that race, and you would think, okay, no biggie. Go right into the next week, get ready. But, I mean, the virus took, like, gosh, like 8 days to get out of my system. And I didn't really start feeling somewhat back to normal until race day. And then I tried to basically kill myself with how hot I got in the car, and we had some issues with the cool shirt that a lot of the drivers use and wear. You know, for whatever reason, Sunday ours wouldn't plug in. So that fluid in that shirt, instead of cooling my body as I got warm, the fluid in that shirt got hot. So it just was a compounding issue. So I was really hot in that car Sunday. And by the time the race was over, when I got out of the car, I pretty much passed out. My vision went to black.
When you got out of the car, honestly, like, your beautiful son came over to you, right? And it was a very cool little photo and whatnot. But when you put him down and you sat down next to the car, you did. You looked like shit. Jenson Button had said that he had to stop almost twice because he thought he was going to pass out. I mean, I know he's used to, riding around without a roof on his car. But still, it seemed like the conditions didn't help at all. But here's the deal. Everyone was writing your eulogy, like, with these restarts, just because of the way that 2023 has gone. that everybody is getting screwed on restarts. So the fact that it was happening to you so many times, three times, you know, in the overtime segment, people were just saying, which is the, who's the guy that's going to jump you? Who's the guy that's going to, you know, honestly, like everyone was writing your eulogy. And for the first time this season, you were able to fight through the picks multiple times. It was by far the most impressive win of this young 2023 season, right? So what was the difference there? What, don't thank me. What was the fucking difference there? How did you do? How did you buck the trend that we've seen take down? I mean, William Byron is making a career on late race, you know, overtakes. What made you buck that trend?
It was a number of things. I think the first one that comes to mind for me is just how strong our Monster Energy Toyota Camry TRD was. I mean, we saw it from the first lap of practice, just how fast the car was. It had the takeoff speed, it had the long run speed. You look at the sector breakdowns, our car was really, really strong in every sector of the track. So that just gives you a really good feeling going into qualifying and in the race. So I think that was a big part of it. A second part of it for sure. Well, I was definitely screwing up and just missing turn one entirely by overdriving turn one. You know, I was leaving the door open on corner exit for guys like Kyle, William, and other drivers. But thankfully, because I was missing the corner myself, no one was really running over the top of me getting into the corner. So that worked out for sure too. And then the last couple, having Kyle Busch line up behind me. I know a lot of people have this thought and stir the pot with, oh, you know, that's Tyler's old car and that's Kyle Busch.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to get crazy. Kyle races with a huge amount of respect to a lot of drivers. Me and him have raced each other with a lot of respect since day one of my Cup career. So I knew that he wasn't going to make it easy for sure, but I knew he was going to race very, very fair, very clean. And obviously he had been voicing his concerns about how drivers have been racing each other here recently too. So I felt very confident in having him lined up behind me that, you know, if I make a mistake, he's going to get by me, but he wasn't going to go in there and he wasn't going to wreck me to, you know, take the lead in turn one. So that definitely helped as well.
Does it mean anything to you that your new 45 ride finished one position and won the race ahead of the second place finisher in your old car, Kyle Busch? I know you said you guys have immense respect for each other, but do you think there's anything to be said about the Toyota beating the Chevy that you previously drove?
I put in a lot of hard work with that team for sure. They worked really hard to help me become a better road course racer. We really saw that gain in performance between the 2020 season, my rookie year, and the following year. So we've worked really hard on that together. And I knew that again, I knew they weren't going to make it easy on me. But I look at it not necessarily from that vantage point, but looking at how you know, as a whole last year, all the Toyotas, you know, Christopher, Denny talked about it, Martin talked about it, you know, Ty, what didn't experience it much last year, but the few road course races he had in the 45 car last year, you know, all the guys saying, you know, we aren't really good on the road course. We need to make them better. And so for me, the exciting part about it was, you know, we had the tire test in January. I went, Kyle Busch went with the A car, Austin Cindric went with his ride in the two car. And we went to work on that tire test to see where we were at and evaluate. And it gave us a good baseline to build off of in the months after the fact, leading into the first road course here at COTA and make our cars better. And yeah, just a huge, you know, I'm just really proud of the team and Toyota. They did immense work in those couple of months to make the cars that much better. I think how much better they were than last year for me is the real part that's really exciting about it.
This is the first Toyota win that we've seen this season. It's pretty much been a Chevy parade up front, aside from Logano's win at Atlanta. And it's also the first win for your new team this year, as well as your first with 2311. Which of those is most important to you? Is it just getting the win? Is it getting it for your team? Is it with the new team? Or is it the breaking up the Chevys up top?
Well, I think they're all important. You know, for me personally, I was really excited to get my first win and have Monster Energy on the car. There's a lot of great partners that I'm working with for the first time in my life and with this year, you know, Monster, Jordan Brand, Money Lion, McDonald's, I go down the list. I worked with a lot of new people. I had Xfinity on the car for the first time in Atlanta last weekend. So it's really important to run good for the new partners I'm working with, building those relationships. I'd say for me, it kind of goes back into what I've just brought up. You know, for me, getting a Toyota to victory lane on a road course with how displeased everyone really was with the quality of speed that they had last year is probably the most important part of it to me.
I had a guy send in a question. The guy's name is Garrett Ducommun. He's met you a couple of times. One question I always wanted to know about the race winners, how they celebrate. I know they jump on a private jet back to Charlotte or whatever, but then does MJ or Denny have a rager party on Sunday? He knows that you're a little bit, you know, you're a soft-spoken guy, but he wants to know if you got jiggy or what. What happens now? I saw Denny immediately leap up and take some credit. Oh, I know this kid was special. You know what I mean? Like, it was funny to see Denny put on the owner hat and take a little credit with you. I really like seeing that. But what had happened? Did you get the call from MJ? Did you go smoke some cigars, play some poker?
What was actually really cool about, there was a lot of interesting parallels. As I've been finding out, I found out on Sunday and the days following. So Michael would have been there at the racetrack Sunday, but he was celebrating his wife's 45th birthday on Sunday, of all things. So yeah, I was with, Curtis Polk, one of the owners was there. Him and Michael are really, really tight. So I didn't have my phone. I left it in the hauler, but Curtis called Michael right away and I got to chat with him. They were at dinner. They were really excited about it. And that's when I discovered that it was his wife's 45th birthday and the 45 car won. So, yeah, pretty cool. I got to talk to him and, you know, I'm glad Denny came down after the race to celebrate. Kurt coming down after getting out of the booth to celebrate with his team too meant a lot. This team, this car means a lot to him. So I'm glad he got to be in the booth to see it and then got to come down and celebrate with us afterwards. But on the party aspect of it, I was dead, as we talked about earlier. I was in bad shape. We didn't land in Charlotte until 1 a.m. And we were all like, what do we do? 1 a.m. There's only about an hour left. It's some of the bars that are open. What's our game plan? And we have meetings and all sorts of stuff to debrief, you know, a few hours later. So we're trying to figure out what our best strategy is going to be. So Kurt's, the coordinator of the fund department, CFD is his title, as he's given himself here. And so he's putting on a party for us later tonight. We're going to definitely get after it. We're going to be slinging some beasts and getting out of shape, I'd say.
Good for you, man.
What are your thoughts on the new rules on stage racing at road courses? And what rules would you change if you could?
Yeah, there's been a lot of ideas shared, certainly, in the driver's chat with NASCAR and the days following, you know, COTA. We've been aware for a while now that restarts late in the race have just gotten really, really crazy. There's a lot of things that play into that. But backing up to the point on the strategy and no cautions for the stages. Well, when you have a fast car, certainly less cautions is a good thing for sure. And for us, I guess I take the speed out of, I just remove my situation from this, but I think it's great to have the ability and option for teams to mix up their strategy, go for a different style, maybe have an extra pit stop or have one less pit stop. William and myself were on differing strategies, and depending on how the race just naturally played out, was going to kind of determine who had an advantage on the other. So with stage breaks at the end of each stage, it kind of removes that strategy. If you want to have the track position to win the race last year, you pretty much had to pit with two to go and forego all possibility of stage points so that you could restart at the front of the field for the following restart. So I like that we got rid of it because it allows teams to still chase that strategy. They can pit early and try and leapfrog other cars that are staying out to capture those stage points and try and, you know, get ahead of them just by putting tires on sooner. And then again, just having differing strategies of, you know, two stops, three stops, places that like Sonoma, where there's an extremely high amount of tire fall off. I think it'll really break up that race and really you'll have the F1 style strategies playing out. It'll really mix it up. You'll be on you know, you'll be on the edge of your toes wondering whose strategy is going to work out the best. You're going to be looking at lap times and gaps and who's closing and who's fading. So I personally like it for the road courses.
We're chatting a lot about who's the greatest road course racer presently in NASCAR. And obviously, you're our answer right now. Tied for 13th all time. One of the guys who would probably be breathing down your neck is currently rehabbing in Vail, Colorado, too, which makes it a little bit different. But there are no road courses now until June. I think Sonoma's the next one in June, like you had mentioned.
Yes.
We had asked Logano last week, what's a perfect Anthony Logano track? He says, every week I put myself in a position.
Did you call him Anthony Logano?
Oh, yeah, I did. I call him, sorry. Anthony Alfredo. Anthony Alfredo, Joey Logano. They're all Italians to me. I really don't like them.
Yeah.
Dan DiOrio. It doesn't really fucking matter.
Unbelievable.
So we asked Logano. He says, I put myself in a situation to win every week. Are you a road course guy now? What do we have to tell people about going into Richmond and stuff like that? Between now and June, do I continue to bet and win money on Tyler Reddick? I guess is my question. What's our plan outside of the road courses?
Well, I can't really talk about that.
You cannot.
Part,
Lord, you cannot. That's up to me. That's up to me, just in case NASCAR's listening. Yeah.
You know, I definitely knew coming into this year, some of my strengths and weaknesses could change. You know, looking at the tracks that 2311 really excelled at were tracks that I had good speed. You know, Kansas is a good track for me, and they won both races there last year. Michigan, they have good speed, and that was a track we were okay at. So I knew potentially coming into this year with Toyota and their strengths and the things they've been able to do really well that I maybe was struggling with last year. So I kind of felt like I was prepared and ready for just things to be different, if that makes sense. So I truly don't know. Every single race weekend that we've went into, I've been really just impressed, pleasantly surprised. Just again, it's so new to me. But the team's just done a really good job every single weekend. I know we had the rough start at the beginning of the year, but like a lot of the details that are very important to, you know, put yourself in position to win these races, even with the things going wrong in our day, we were making the right decisions. We were doing a lot of the right things. So I've been just really excited to go to the racetrack because it's so new to me. Richmond's one of those where as a driver, I've really struggled at early in my career, and I've learned some things, picked up on some things to get better. And in my opinion, you know, some of the best drivers at Richmond are Denny Hamlin and Martin Truex. And, you know, now we're teammates, we're all under the Toyota banner, so we can lean into them for knowledge. And Richmond for me has been a really fun track to race. It at times, as people often complain about, you know, it gets spread out and there's things going on, but I really enjoy racing the track there. And we were actually just working on the simulator here about an hour ago on some Richmond, and it seems like things are pretty close. So it's unknown, but I mean, I've been pleasantly surprised every weekend by our speed and pace and the amount that we continue to learn. We won Sunday, but there was three or four things we could have done better, and the whole team staying really sharp, really on top of it. We're continuing to improve. Even, you know, winning is great, but it's never good enough. We're continuing to work on these things that are really important.
So obviously a dominant showing for yourself and the 45 team on Sunday at Circuit of the Americas, but your teammate Bubba Wallace in the 23 car had some trouble and when interviewed post-race was very, very hard on himself. What was your reaction to his comments and what advice or conversation did you have with him following the race?
You know, me and Bubba are pretty similar in that regard. It's a tough thing when you have all those emotions running through your veins, through your mind, through your blood. When you're hot, you're fired up. You know, it's easy to say things that, you know, probably better left unsaid. You know, he certainly wasn't happy with how the last 2 weeks went, but those are things that can happen to anybody, that happen to the best of us. And they're tough. I mean, Bubba, myself, this whole team, this whole organization, we dump every last ounce that we have into, you know, the setups, preparation. And so when things don't go right, it's hard. It's hard on the mind and the soul. And so, yeah, I got to see him yesterday a few times, whether it was at meetings. We had an event last night that we were both at, and just kind of, I'm probably driving him a little crazy, just not leaving him alone about it. Like, hey man, like, you're fine. You got this. Let's move on to Richmond. It's part of it. And so that's a big thing. You want to be hard on yourself to a degree, but you'd never want to be too hard on yourself. You never want to, you know, take it too far. And I'm guilty of that. I really am. I have a bad habit sometimes on bad days at the racetrack. I bring it home and I'm not my best self. And it's just an easy thing to do when you commit your whole life to it. You love it. You care about it. It's really important.
I find alcohol helps. We're going to wrap this up, my friend.
Yes.
And I got to, you know, again, a dominant performance. I mean, there wasn't a part of that race where you weren't neck and neck with somebody. It was a real pleasure to watch. And we look forward to obviously talking to you throughout the season. We'll see you at Talladega. That's the next one we're live at. Good luck in Richmond. Give my apologies to, what's his name again? Guido Logano?
Slogano, I believe it's pronounced.
Tyler, congratulations, man. We'll talk soon.
You always keep it interesting. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you, Tyler. Good luck. See you, congratulations. Baby.
What shoe game you got on now? Hold them up. Do you got anything good?
I'm weird. I like to take my shoes off sometimes. I got the Concrete Forza.
Oh, nice. See, I'm telling you, this guy's swaggy. Shoe game went through the goddamn
I'm weird though. I like being barefoot sometimes. Like, I have my shoes off right now, but I have them here.
So can you just get any Jordans you want now, given that you work for the boss?
I mean, I haven't been asking for too many pairs, but they had those fours, the Nike SB Air Jordan 4s come out. That have been on Instagram, you know, a lot of women skaters going around like New York City skating. I saw those, and because of the colors, I reached out to them and like, hey, I need to get these shoes. I think they're going to get here like sometime this week. But yeah, you know, I've been trying to align the colors of shoes and coordinate it with the car. It's been a lot of fun to do that. I mean, I used to just get dressed, right, and just go out the door and put on a pair of shoes, and now I walk into the closet and I'm like, okay, which pair of shoes am I going to start with? Okay, these shoes will go with this shirt, this hat. It's been fun. I love it.
If any size 15s fall in, let me know. Right?
Yeah, it might be a little big on me. I'm sorry.
What size shoe are you?
8.5.
Oh, we're the same.
Oh, look at you guys. The shoe swap. Oh, no. So I'm shit out of luck on the 15s, but if an extra 8.5, if a dupe comes through, send it our way. I need a new cutout. I still got the old 8.
We're rocking
cheese.
8 merch. We got to update our wardrobe. The 8
merch, so.
Yeah, they're working on that for sure. You know, there's things coming through. We got exciting stuff in the pipeline, so there'll be more merch out there. There's a few things out, but more and more is going to roll out. I think Toyota has a pop-up above me, but I don't know how many of them are floating around.
I got three of them at home. All right, my man, it's good to see you. Give my best to everybody.
Thank you.
Feel better, Tyler. Appreciate Thanks a lot.
You. Yeah, as of 30 minutes ago, I'm good now. I think I'm back normal.
Good to hear.
It's crazy how I beat these guys up. This track in particular. Everybody looked like dog shit. I mean,
Marge, my heart rate was
wild. That fucking heart rate thing. That was the first time I'd seen that.
Where is that? Did they make you wear like a watch or something? How are they
I wore a Wahoo like heart rate monitor. I put it on my forearm because I keep track of my heart rate for myself, just for keeping track of my health and whatnot. Gotcha. I wear a Polar heart rate monitor and a watch. And I went back and was looking through it. I just found my watch. I left it in my suit and I just got it today. My heart rate was in the red, zone 5, you know, the high zone that you have for 2 hours.
I mean, I saw you get, I think you hit like 190 or something.
I hit 201 the finish line when the race ended.
Yeah.
Your heart was running quicker than your fucking car. Like, you know, like what's your baseline?
Well, my max is, I think, 208. It's been going down as you get older, but resting heart rate's 47 or 8.
I'm getting chest pain just thinking about that.
Daniel Suarez is, by the way, melted off his arm. That fucking guy was salty. But you can't comment on that. All right, Tyler, it was a pleasure seeing you. We can cut in the sneakers thing. We can cut in the heart rate thing if we want.
Since we're putting stuff in, I got one more question for you. Can you rank the current road courses that NASCAR drives on, including Road America, where you won last year?
I would say my favorite for sure, just if I'm just out there making laps by myself, driving the track, Coda's number one for sure. Most dynamic track we have.
Yep.
Thrilling to get right and just adrenaline, like just no room for error. I would put Road America second. Third, that's where it gets tricky. I don't know what I would put third. Maybe Sonoma. yeah, but Coda is by far number one. I love this place. I've got great other cars here. Really fun track. And a lot of pavement. So when I screw up, when I overdrive a corner like I do every lap, I have room. I can, you know, stay on the racetrack.
All right. For the fourth time, goodbye,
okay,
Tyler.
I'm done. Sorry. Bye. Bye. Get your porn star in there and do your deal.
All right, so that's Tyler Reddick. And again, like Tyler Reddick, a lot of times when the cameras go off, we get more from our drivers than when the cameras are on. And so, like, he's talking about sneakers and shit like that.
We couldn't cut him loose.
Yeah, couldn't get him out of here, for Christ's sake. So I said Tyler Reddick is NASCAR's best road course driver. Yes or no? Right now.
Right now, yes, for sure.
Chase
right so now. Good. We're talking right now.
Right now, yeah.
Chase is
and in a cast.
What?
Chase in a cast.
Yeah. Chase is injured.
We don't know if he's ready by
also,
Sonoma.
Even with Chase, I'm prepared to say Reddick is the best. Of the seven road course races run with the next gen car, Tyler Reddick has run three of them.
What's Chase's number in those seven? Probably two.
Watch it be the other four.
All right, so
someone let us know.
Tyler Reddick with three road course wins is now tied for 13th all time. And he's tied with, this is since 1972, the modern era. He's tied with Cal Yarborough, David Pearson, Ernie Irvin, Jeffrey Bodine, and Richard Petty. So all like big fucking names. But Truex, these three active drivers, Kyle Busch and Kyle Larson, they all have four, right? So they do have more wins than the guy who we're saying is the best road course driver. And then, of course, Elliott has seven. Chase Elliott is seven. He's only behind Tony Stewart, who has eight, and Jeff Gordon has nine. So Chase Elliott at 27 years old, it's just an eventuality that this guy will be probably the greatest road course driver in the history of NASCAR. You know, I'm not saying that Tyler Reddick can't catch up to him. So I'm very comfortable titling this episode the greatest road course driver in NASCAR. But I think once Chase gets in and back in his groove, it's kind of game over. Is that agreeable? But right now, I think Reddick's the guy.
I said it before. I think Chase used to be notorious for his road course success, but he's proven to be able to get it done on the ovals too. So I don't think we should just look at him as a kind of a one-trick pony. He's more well-rounded.
You think he gets three more before his career ends and overtakes Gordon?
Yes, but, well, I do think he will get three more, but I don't... I'm not counting out Reddick catching him in that time.
Okay.
Those are skewed, too, because they didn't run road courses back in the day like they do now.
Yeah, right? It was tougher to get to that number.
They've added a lot of tracks.
That's a good point, too. We'll go right to the over-under.
I just add one about Reddick? After the race, I loved it. It was like the most stereotypical NASCAR postgame where he was like talking about how tired he was. He grabs a monster and takes a big gulp, and he's like, all right, now I feel energized after a monster energy. Yeah. It was so perfect. Yeah.
They never
threw that out during the interview, too.
I was going to say.
Party. He's like, yeah, we're going to be drinking a lot of beasts tonight, which I think is the the hard monster energy. Seltzers.
Even the the interview, he would just casually, his drivers are so. Yeah. You could tell he's a veteran for as young as he is.
Yeah.
But let's get into the over-under segment this week. A lot of guys impressed me. Let's start with some of the young guns. Ty Gibbs finishes ninth and picks up his second consecutive top 10. Really impressed with Ty. And another guy, Todd Gilliland, getting a top 10, finishing 10th. So those two guys over-delivered. It impressed me. Tyler Reddick as well. I'm just got to commend him. He looked dominant since qualifying. He had a second, 1 second lead on the next fastest car, it seemed like. And then he proved it in the race despite three overtimes. So a lot of times we see in that instance the fastest car that should win, that's dominant, gets a win stolen from them. So I want to commend Tyler Reddick for actually getting it done and closing it out. Congrats to Tyler. Corey LaJoie, another guy, and McDowell, 11th and 12th, respectively. But let's go to the guys that disappointed me. Firstly, Bubba Wallace. I hate to say it. A guy had just commented on his teammate, Tyler Reddick, clearly had equipment, clearly had the car that could win it. And Bubba had quite the opposite luck. I wouldn't even say luck. Quite the opposite result that Bubba or that Tyler did. So, highs and lows for 23-11. Tyler showed what the team was capable of, and Bubba kind of fumbled the bag and had a little bit of a meltdown. So, he disappointed me. And then, just the what did you call them? The pay drivers or the drivers, the rented drivers?
Yeah, the hired guns.
The hired guns. Yep. Yeah, yeah. Jimmy Johnson, not his fault, but I was a little disappointed that we didn't see much of him. And then I would have liked to see those guys a little bit more competitive. Kimmy 29th, Daly 36th. So that's what I got. I think
that's all valid. I'll throw Bowman in as the best driver without a win so far this season. 5 top 10 finishes in 6 races. And like you had him at the end, you threw a quick bet in him on the live bets. And yeah. I thought that if anyone was going to fuck this up, there's that narrative that with Byron and with Kurt Busch trailing Tyler Reddick, they both had enough respect for Tyler. It's early enough in the season that people aren't so desperate and they both have wins. So they didn't necessarily need to try and bump Tyler Reddick out of there. Then all of a sudden Bowman came in and I was like, he doesn't have to have the respect. He doesn't have the win. I don't think he cared what part of the season it was. But again, like you had said, you couldn't catch Reddick, so it didn't matter.
Right.
So that's the only one I would add.
Anything for you, Quiggs?
I would just say, I mean, you said it, but and it's obvious he won Reddick.
Yeah.
Because there's part of you that like being first on a restart in overtime on a road course is like the worst spot to be. He did it 3 times perfectly. He was on like bad pit strategy that could have like really fucked him, and his car was just too fast. So like a lot of things worked against him to make it so that he wouldn't win that race, and he still
well said.
Did. So I would just say him, but strongly. Pretty obviously won, but he did over deliver.
All right, let's throw Coda behind us. Let's go to Richmond. The Richmond preview is brought to you by NASCAR. NASCAR is our presenting sponsor. We're going to Richmond Raceway, 3/4-mile D-shaped asphalt racetrack just outside of Richmond, Virginia. It's the Toyota Owners 400. It's made up of 400 laps, a total of 300 miles. America's premier short track, also called the Action Track. This is going to be the first of 3 consecutive short tracks that NASCAR is going to do before we go to Dega. So we're going to have Richmond, and then we're going to go to Bristol to run on dirt at night, and then we're going to go to Martinsville. Each short track has a little bit of a different personality, but I think we're going to be able to actually string together some thoughts week to week on how these guys are performing on similar tracks. This is Josh Williams' person that hit me. Richard Petty holds the record for most wins at Richmond with 13. Kyle Busch is tied for second with 6. So Kyle Busch should be up there. There's a little rain in the forecast for Saturday, and then Sunday is supposed to be unseasonably cold. It's going to be only a high of 60 degrees. So you can watch this whole thing, everything that's going down in Richmond this weekend. You can watch the Toyota Owners 400 live from Richmond Raceway on FS1 at 3:30 Eastern Time this Sunday, April 2nd. Before we get to our picks, I'm going to do a little twisted history of NASCAR just because Richmond has something that everybody should see. Jordan Daniels sent this in to me, but if you want to Google it or if you guys are watching this on YouTube and we can kind of throw some of these clips in, the Richmond Spring Winston Cup Series race in 1986. It was the Miller High Life 400, and it was awesome. I sent it around to you guys yesterday. It's what 1980s NASCAR is all about. So, you know, Dale Sr. was leading with the most laps. And all of a sudden during a caution, he undoes his net, unlocks himself, and he sits out. He's driving with one hand while he's cleaning his own windshield so he doesn't have to pit. That doesn't happen anymore for people who don't know. And it was awesome to see.
That's wildly impressive.
I don't think it's allowed to happen. I think that's
possibly be allowed.
I think that's a safety violation that'll either get you black flagged or at least some sort of. Like,
there would definitely be some sort of penalty.
Yeah. Has to be, right?
Also,
Suarez could hit you at any time. Like,
yeah, don't you usually need help getting like out? Yeah. Like, aren't you?
You
like,
got a lot of straps and things to where it's like it's not just like a stick your head out the window.
But it's exactly what he did.
Yeah,
he was sitting on the side cleaning his window. It's
one hand on the stick because he's going around the curve too.
Yeah.
I try to do that on iRacing. Like when we're under yellow, I'll just leave my wheel. And I'll like run to the fridge quick and grab a beer, and I always crash.
Right.
So that's wildly impressive.
Yeah. And then to top it all off, it's Dale and Darrell Waltrip. And all of a sudden, Darrell Waltrip on the final lap takes Dale on a turn. So Dale spins him out, and they both crash. And then Kyle Petty comes and takes a checkered flag, and it was his first Cup Series win. So it's everything that you want. Kyle's grandfather Lee won twice in Richmond, Kyle won once. And then Richard Petty won 13 times there, which I, you know, including 6 straight between 70 and 73. Richard Petty owned that goddamn place. So it's one of those clips that's chock full of history. So check out the Miller High Life 400 from 1986. And it's just awesome NASCAR history. All right, picking the tires. Who do we like going into to Richmond? Who wants to go first?
I will start. I'm going to go heavy with the Toyotas. It is the Toyota Owners 400. I did the same thing with the Pennzoil. I took Joey Logano. I'm going with the Toyota, specifically Martin Truex. He's currently plus 850 to win the thing. I think he's going to be really, really fast. He's got a great history of running here in the last six races here. Last five races, he has five top tens, four top fives. So his average finish position is 3.8. I'm going with Martin Truex, but I also think that his teammates are going to be right there in contention alongside him. I'm probably going to take Toyota to win plus 180, as well as Joe Gibbs to win plus 245. And I also, like I said, like Martin Truex as my main prime Toyota driver at plus 850. Large, I know you are a big Truex fan. You're wearing the Truex stuff.
Yep.
And you also refuse to bet on him.
I can't. I told him I wasn't going to bet on him.
We're kind of going to do a yin-yang thing here because I think I know who you're going to take. And it's a driver who I like probably equally as I do with Truex. But
I like Denny.
There you go.
I think listen, I got a lot of value off of getting in there early. If you're listening to this before qualifying and before practice, I understand a lot of people like to wait, but I got Tyler Reddick at plus 1,000, and it comes to race time is plus 350.
Yeah.
So dominating after qualifying. Yeah, the odds dropped.
I felt the need to add lines from Wednesday to the graphic because I knew people were going to be like, you didn't get Reddick at plus 1,000.
Large, yeah, I also want to say we've done that a couple times where I've given Joey Logano, he went on to win the pole. He didn't end up winning the race, but and then also with Kyle Larson a couple weeks ago. So it pays to get the picks in early. You get a lot better odds. And, yeah, you would have had Larson or Reddick 10-1 instead of plus 350.
The reason I don't think you have to wait either is because this track is more like tire maintenance. That's why I think I like these veterans. So it might not even be somebody who qualifies that well.
Yeah.
I don't think it's going to make as big of a difference on this track as it has in tracks in recent weeks. So I'll lock in Denny real quick at plus 1,000. And, you know, it's probably not going to move, but it is what it is. There's an interesting matchup in so we have this group thing. We have group betting. And I told you that I like the fact – well, no, I think Spider had said it more. Like, I think Spider likes the fact that, you know, Suarez is standing up for himself. Nobody likes what he did on pit row. So I think I want to bet Suarez. I think the best way for me to bet him is best finish in Group C. On the Barstool Sportsbook, Group C is Brad Keselowski, Josh Berry, Chris Buescher, and Daniel Suarez. That's Group C. And Daniel Suarez is plus 275 to win that group. I'm taking him. Can you see? I mean, I think that's, other than Brad K, I don't see Josh or Chris Buescher. I don't know. I think that he's a good value there, plus 275. So I'm going to take him. I like the Toyotas, and I like the fact that you're betting the Toyotas. That's the only thing I can do since I'm not allowed to bet Martin Truex. So if I take an odd number winner, I can get, if I take the Toyotas, I get everybody. But if I bet an odd number winner, that gives me Denny, Truex, Tyler Reddick. It gives me almost all the Toyotas drivers other than Christopher Bell, who's, you know, the favorite amongst those guys. So I think I'm going to take an odd number winner too. All right, so I'm odd, I'm the Group C, and I'm Denny Hamlin at plus 1,000 right now. Quicks?
Like that. I'm taking Truex as well.
Wow.
It just kind of feels like
it's a Truex.
Look at the fucking shirt, just, too.
Truex is, yeah. Duex.
What about, how about this? Bar Stool Sports.
That would be sweet.
That's,
I like that.
Because this is iconic, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So think about that.
The bass jumping like that out is so
Bar
sick.
Stool Sports.
Especially on a hat.
Yeah. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
And then, which surprised neither of you even mentioned him, Kyle Busch.
Yeah. I'm intrigued. I was going to say.
He does not, like, he's raced there 34 times. He hasn't been top 10 six times. He's always up there. He's won it the most out of anybody. Six wins. I think you'd be dumb not to bet him.
All right.
Because he's going to be there.
Fuck it. Add him to my car.
He's top five more than half the times he races.
He's
out of
plus 350 top
size.
Three.
Yeah, I like that.
Oh,
that's not enough, though, right? Is plus 350 enough? I don't know.
I don't know, but I mean, I think he's
plus 1200 sounds actually delicious.
I would. I mean,
shit, I didn't even see it.
Vegas knows what they're doing, but like, he would be way closer to being the favorite of this race if I was doing the odds on it. So
I kind of like the following just those two top five bets: Martin Truex plus 150, Denny plus 155, Kyle Busch plus 185.
No one's mentioned Harvick, and Harvick
he's
is
an overwhelming
the top.
Favorite. I don't understand 6-1. Like, why is it the tire wear? Then he's just a master at understanding.
That's yeah, exactly what I think it is. So I just think plus 600 stinks on that for the winner. So I'm not touching him. That's why I'm going to the other guys like Denny. I didn't even grab Kyle Busch, but something I'm putting on the list. All right, so what's the finals? You have
just Truex and Busch.
Truex and Busch for now. And then obviously we'll add stuff towards the end of the week as we start to see more and more and as the lines start to update on the Barstool Sportsbook. Does anybody have anything else?
I think that's it.
All right. Thank you, Tyler Reddick, for coming on. I'm sure we're going to have him on after another road course win. And then we're also going to be dropping something not on the podcast on its own. Josh Williams, NASCAR's bad boy, is sitting down with us. So be on the lookout for that on the YouTube channel as well. Thanks for listening, guys. Talk to you next week.
Peace.